listening to A Lump in the Road. This is the diary of my sister, cancer, and me.
It's Wednesday, the 11th of January. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
I know we kind of have seen each other a million times since the 1st of January, but actually we haven't recorded since the 18th of December. And it was a real biggie, wasn't it? It was literally the night before your surgery.
It was, and I remember... Gosh, it'll be much more familiar potentially to people listening, but for me it was a long time ago and I remember feeling utterly terrified, like all of a sudden it had just got real. And I think the last time we recorded was actually quite a sad podcast, wasn't it?
It was quite emotional, wasn't it? I think we had a little cry afterwards, didn't we?
Yeah, we had a lot of cries.
A few tears. So obviously primarily the big question for you is, how did the surgery go? Was it a success that you know of? And how did you feel before and after? All of those things we need to talk about.
Yeah, we do. So the first thing that we should point out, I think, is that the surgery, as far as I know, has been a success. So the lump is gone. And all I know up until this point from a cancer point of view is that the lump has gone. I don't know if it was all cleared because I'm still waiting for the histology report to come back.
Okay. All right. So that is huge, great news.
It is.
Yeah, it's positive news.
I think so. Yeah. Okay. I mean, we don't know for sure until we get that back. But yeah.
Talk to me about the morning of surgery. Talk to me about how you were feeling and what happened.
Yeah. Okay. So we had to be in the hospital for 7 o'clock and Andrew and Beatrice took me in, which was really lovely of them. And I went down to theatre pretty much within 2 or 3 hours of arriving. So for my particular type of surgery, as you know, which was the cat flap surgery, I had to have...
Which we've named, obviously. Yeah, yeah. That's not really what
that's
it's
That's not
called.
A medical term.
If you're just joining us on this episode, please don't go away and speak to your doctor about the cat flap surgery because it doesn't exist.
Well, it does, technically. So, but with the cat flap surgery, there are a few things that need to happen before you actually go into theatre. The first one being that the oncoplastic surgeon comes round and literally maps out on your body, so mapped out underneath my right armpit, because, and again, I don't know whether we did mention this, but in addition to having the tumour removed and the reconstruction of my right breast, I was also having lymph nodes biopsied. So the sentinel lymph nodes were being biopsied, which is basically the removal of two of the lymph nodes that are closest to the breast are taken away and biopsied in the same way as the initial pieces of tissue were, to see if there are cancerous cells within those. So
when you say the initial piece of tissue, you're talking way back.
Right. Yeah. So it's a biopsy rather than a removal of tumour.
Okay. But they were just able to do that at the time because you were under.
Yeah. It's what they usually do when they are performing surgery. If they can't feel it in your lymph nodes, they will biopsy the lymph nodes just to make sure that it isn't in there. So
very thorough.
Yeah, very thorough. But apparently in the States, and I presume maybe in the private sector, you can have that biopsy result done and given back to the surgeon during the surgery for the tumour removal and reconstruction. So it can happen in the moment. It's just that we haven't got that facility with the National Health Service. But you know, that's still fine. So they do the lymph node surgery at the same time as the tumour removal. In order to get all of this right and in order to do the reconstruction properly, the surgeon has to come and literally draw all over you from underneath your armpit, all the way underneath your breast, over your breast, around the tumour, around your back.
Now, I have been privy to the photographs. I mean, if anyone were to ever find our phones, God only knows what they might think, because, you know, we're not backwards at at coming forward with each other,
no,
are we?
We're not.
And we've never been shy around each other. And so I was getting quite graphic images sent to my phone on the day. But it was really interesting to see them because you would never see that unless you were going through what you've been through.
No, you would never know. So he was very thorough. And as I was lying there, again, I always try and be half naked with these people and so casual and blasé. And I'm just, it's not a situation for that. So maybe I need to learn just to be quiet. But as I'm lying there and he's drawing over me, I'm chatting away and I said to him, oh gosh, you know, it looks like you're drawing a map. And he just said, well, it is very complex. The planning of this surgery is really complex. And the planning is where all the work is, basically. And in addition to drawing all over me, he got like a little, is it a Doppler, where you can hear inside the skin. So, you know, when you're pregnant, if you've ever been lucky enough to be pregnant, they put a machine on your tummy that can let you hear the baby's heartbeat.
I know what you mean,
and you can hear the blood rushing and it sounds like horses and all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But they use a miniature version of that machine to listen to the blood vessels underneath your armpit if that's where your piece of tissue is coming from. Mm. So they have to locate the artery and the vein that they're going to use to perforate the flap once it's in situ under your breast. So they do that. It was like watching him do something with the borrowers, because the little micro...
You are a little borrower, though, aren't you? I mean, for those people who've never seen you or me, we are rather tiny, aren't
quite
we? We're little.
Yeah. Do you think it was just so that the technology was in line with my actual size?
Maybe. Maybe he had to get a special little,
little
instrument.
Teeny one.
Yeah. But God, he's a bit clever, isn't he?
It's amazing, because what he was listening to was... What he was listening for was the sound of the blood going through these vessels, so that he knew exactly where they were, so that once they had opened up the under the armpit area to remove the nodes, he then was able to find the blood vessels that they were going to use to supply the blood to the piece of tissue that he was going to take from under my armpit to use to construct my breast. So it was really complex and, I mean, fascinating. Really fascinating. I would have loved to have seen the operation.
Oh, God,
really,
Larry, that is just madness.
Morbid?
A little bit.
So anyway, that was the first thing that happened when I got in there. And he was really thorough and he was lovely as usual. I really liked him. And, you know, that really helps, I think, give you a bit of confidence in the person that is about ready to save your life, actually. Yeah. I have to say I'm a bit in love with him for saving my life.
Yeah, I'm a little bit in love with him too for saving your life.
It's all a bit strange. So that was the first thing that happened. And then all the usual stuff kind of sort of kicked in, change into your gown, do all the other bits and bobs. But before we went into surgery, I had to go up to a different department within the hospital to have some dye injected into my nipple, which was going to...
That's made me wince. That's really made me wince.
Well, it's interesting. Interesting, because the lady that was doing it was so apologetic and so lovely. She said, oh gosh, this is really going to sting and it's not going to feel very pleasant. But just for the record, it was really all right. Again, referring back to pregnancy, and again, if you were lucky enough to breastfeed, then occasionally when breastfeeding goes wrong, it feels like your baby is a little bit of a piranha and it's biting your nipple. Okay, it does. I can liken it to that. So not very pleasant, but not skyrocket painful.
It's like when you have a smear, isn't it?
And it's just
horrible.
Not very nice.
It's unpleasant, but it's not shockingly painful.
For me, I have to say, now you've given that as a parallel, for me a smear is worse. That awful feeling is so uncomfortable and yucky, and it makes me feel nauseous. That's worse than the nipple dye.
Okay, well, that's good for people to
know. It's good for people to know that on my scale, it's not as bad as a smear, which I don't think is terrible, but a bit nauseous.
Yeah,
nausea-inducing. Nice. Anyway, so yeah, so that dye goes into your nipple so that when they are performing the surgery, your lymph nodes can easily be found because the dye goes to the lymph nodes.
Oh.
Without that dye...
It's like painting by numbers.
It's exactly like that, like fuzzy felt.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, but without that dye, they wouldn't be able to find your lymph nodes. They're teeny and they're obscure and they're trapped behind all sorts of tissue inside your body.
Goodness me. Right, well, one thing I did want to ask you about the surgery was, we did speak in our last podcast about our weird and strange love of anaesthesia. not the effects afterwards of the anaesthesia, but actually the going under. We both quite like that feeling of losing control.
Disappointing.
Yeah, really?
Yeah. It was disappointing this time. Maybe I had a different type of anaesthetic. Maybe because this is so serious.
You didn't have the Michael Jackson drugs I had, did you? That we spoke about in our other episode.
The Michael Jackson drugs. It just wasn't as much fun. And I know that sounds ridiculous, wasn't as much fun. But the reality is that what I was having done probably frightened me more than my feelings of hysteria about, I don't know, going under a general. And I can honestly say, I know we're skipping forward a little bit, but the after effects of the general anaesthetic for me this time were just awful. It was deeply, deeply unpleasant.
I know exactly what you mean. Yeah. I've had lots and lots of generals.
Yeah.
The one I had when I was giving birth to the twins.
Yes.
As you know, because you were there.
I was there.
You were literally witness to the whole episode. One came...
You can never unsee that.
You can never unsee it, as Tom, my husband, says a lot. So without too much detail, one was forceps with an episiotomy.
Yeah.
And the other was emergency C-section.
When
I say emergency... it was general anaesthetic straight in and taken down.
Yeah.
Now, I have always quite been okay with general anaesthetics, but in my mind, I don't think they ever thought they were going to need it. So I think they had just a bog standard measurement, rammed it in, because when I woke up, I felt like I'd had horse tranks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I think that's how you
Do you have horse tranks often?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I can definitely compare it to my normal Saturday night of, you know, a glass of Pinot Grigio and a bit of horse
tranks. Horse tranks, yeah.
But I think what you're saying is the same as how I felt.
Yeah, I would say I felt terrible afterwards. And I don't really, well, I do kind of know why. I was in the operating theatre for just over 4 hours. It's quite a long time, I think, to be knocked out for. And historically, whenever I've had generals, not as many as you, they've been maximum an hour, hour and a half, but more around the sort of 20, 30, 40 minute mark. So I think it was the duration of time that I was under for as well, which probably didn't help. The anaesthetic, the anaesthetist was absolutely amazing. She was lovely and I felt really safe in her hands. It's just that the after effects were so grim.
Yeah,
really, really grim.
So let's move to one of the after effects then when you get home or...
Well, before we kind of go there, I mean, I think there's something that maybe I certainly wasn't anticipating happening was that this surgery that I had is a day case. And I was in surgery for 4 and a bit hours and then in the recovery room for another hour and then back on the day case ward. And the nurses were absolutely amazing, but they require you to pee before you can leave, which was so difficult for me this time. The general anaesthetic disrupts the way that your nervous system and brain talks to your muscles. So peeing is always difficult. So it took me a good 3 hours of trying to pee before I could go home. It was really stressful and I was really wobbly and really distressed. And in addition to that, I was genuinely surprised that when I came out of theatre, and I wasn't expecting this at all, there was no dressing on my breast or wound. It was completely naked. So it had been glued rather than stitched on the outside. And with glue, they don't put a dressing on.
Oh.
So I was lying on my back and the wound, as I think we described last time, goes from underneath my breast into my armpit and all the way around to my back. So it's, I got Beatrice to measure it tonight in advance of this, just because I'm morbid and curious. It's 25 centimetres long. It's big.
That is big.
Yeah. And I wasn't anticipating seeing my naked self looking down. I wasn't anticipating that I'd be lying on my back with the wound kind of open, technically open. I wasn't anticipating any of that.
And Were you thinking there was going to be a gauze on the dressing, a bandage?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it was and presumably has been, well, is stitched inside, but the outside wound is only glued together. It's, there's no stitches that require any taking out. So it's an odd experience, really, to see that so soon when I wasn't expecting it. I think, really, I wish somebody had perhaps mentioned that it was going to be immediately visible and the wound was going to be without dressing.
I kind of felt like that when the baby came out of me and they showed it me. I was like, really? Are you showing me that? And you could have warned me.
You could have told me. You could have told me.
So, yeah, a bit of a shock then.
Was a shock, yeah. And the next thing that really surprised me was that I had to... My surgeon came round to sort of discharge me and make sure I was okay. And at that point, he was really reassuring. He didn't give very much away. He never does.
I bet you tried to make him, though, didn't you? I bet you were asking all sorts of leading questions.
And what's really funny as well is that at this point, even though I'm absolutely off my head and now know how off my head I was, I was trying to act normally. So it's like, yeah, so I'm glad you're here. You know,
is it like when you perhaps have had a drink when you were still living with your parents?
Yes.
And you've had some alcohol.
Trying to blag it.
And you're trying to blag that you haven't and you
totally
feel absolutely
like
fine.
Yeah, totally fine. Yeah. Just totally fine.
So we'll have a really long conversation to prove that I'm fine.
And a really earnest, look you in the eye conversation.
Love
so
it.
It's a bit like that. But poor guy, he's obviously desperate to get away and go home. But what he did say at that point was that the surgery went well, everything was as he expected. What does that mean? Presume exactly what he's told me already. And that it seemed to be very local.
Well, that's good. That word local is very good.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, fantastic.
Yes.
So you go home. Andrew comes.
Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. I have to then put on this post-operative bra.
Oh, God. Do you know what? I didn't even realise that happened at that moment.
That
I thought
then.
You had to put that on when you got home.
I assumed that would happen later, but no, he made me put it on there and then, which was so uncomfortable.
We talked about the bras, didn't we?
Yes.
That's what had made you quite sad previously, now, was the look of these bras.
Yeah, it wasn't just the look, it was the feel, it was everything. In the first one I had was awful, I have to say, but I've subsequently found a new bra brand called Thea. Theya, Thea bras, and they are made of bamboo and they are sweat wicking and proven to help heal your wound. And my wound has healed really well, so worth noting.
Do they not provide anything
for
you at the hospital?
No, they don't. So I had to get strapped into this contraption, which really was so awful. And bearing in mind the wound was on my back as well, and just
it's right along your bra line. So just to give people a bit more of a visual picture, it's literally from under your boob all the way under your armpit, round the back, where your bra
just where
would sit.
Just where my shoulder blade is, yeah. So, and I was too out of it to really be able to communicate to anybody as I went to sleep that night, which, and I use the word sleep in inverted commas for that night, I was too out of it to say, this is so uncomfortable, because you know the awful little hooks on the, not the hooks, the little clasps that you can adjust to your bra or strap on the back, that was digging right into it. And anyway, I feel very sorry for that version of me, and, you know, nobody knew that was so uncomfortable because I couldn't communicate and say, but
you're not yourself at all, are you?
No, it was horrible.
So you get home.
Beatrice is sleeping with me that night just to make sure that she is looking after me, that I'm not going to the loo alone. And to be fair, she was absolutely gorgeous. I got so little sleep that night because every half an hour to 45 minutes I had to get up and wee, because I'd had drunk loads of fluids but had not weed for very long. I had to do a wee at the hospital, as I explained, and that was just a proof.
It feels quite cruel, doesn't it, what they make you do
it
before you can go?
Yeah.
But there are medical reasons
why you have to show them that you can urinate, because there is a dangerous thing that can happen if you haven't weed after a general anaesthetic. But what it did mean was that in my desperation to wee, I drank so much fluid that my stomach was really distended, and then I continued to wee every half an hour throughout the night, so I didn't sleep at all that night. It was
that particular week as well, Larry, was quite tough, wasn't it?
It was.
I know that this is kind of a metaphor that's used all the time, but I think roller coaster of emotions is possibly the best way to describe it.
It was. And I think, you know, even though I felt horrendous and I was up and down and up and down, I still felt better. I knew somewhere emotionally I felt better because the cancer was gone. You know, I went in with cancer
so
and
mentally,
came out
well-being
with cancer.
Felt
I
better.
Knew that I was better. And as I said, I think, or as I, you know, mentioned to you, when I was feeling at my worst, I was at my healthiest.
Yeah.
Because hopefully I am now cancer free. So it's a really odd feeling to know that that has happened to you. And the following day, I felt really weepy. The following few days, I felt really weepy. I was absolutely paranoid that the wound was infected.
Well, I remember the following day after the surgery, I came to you after work.
Oh, God.
And I hope you don't mind me saying, but no. You were paranoid. You asked me to smell you. Does it smell? The wound smell? Just check me. And it was unusual for you to be behaving in that way, because you were usually so in control. You know what's going on. And you were really genuinely quite worried and emotional and not yourself.
Yeah. And I know now that that was the general anaesthetic. The general anaesthetic lasted until Boxing Day was the first time I felt normal, which was one full week. So 8 days, actually, from when the surgery took place. It took that long for it to come out of my system.
There must be things that you wish you had maybe been told, or somebody, maybe you'd heard on another podcast, or somebody had said, Larissa, be careful because.
Oh, God.
Tell me about some things that might have made you feel that you wish you'd known.
Yeah, so firstly, that the general anaesthetic afterwards was going to take so long to clear. It felt horrendous. It made me paranoid, and I kept smelling myself. As I said to you, anybody that came to see me, within reason, I kept saying, could you just smell me, please? Can you smell me? I think I can smell the wound. And Beatrice and Andrew were like, oh my word, Larissa, come on. It's perfectly fine. It's really good. It's looking healthy. I was like, can you photograph it just so I can just check? Can you just check? So yeah, I was really paranoid that the wound smelled. And the other thing that nobody mentioned to me that I wish I'd known in advance is they give you a very long list of what can go wrong. And when you are when you've decided that you're having surgery, you look at that list. Well, I did. I went, okay, fine, brilliant. Not really going to worry
it's
about
like
those.
When you look on the back of a medicine bottle,
it's exactly
it gives
like
you a
that.
Million different side effects.
Exactly. So I knew what they were, but I wasn't too concerned about them. So maybe I should have paid more attention. But one of the things nobody really told me is a description of how my underarm was going to feel. So because of all of the nerve manoeuvring and potential nerve damage and sensory disruption that goes with this surgery, and because they had taken those sentinel lymph nodes, what felt like a fluid buildup underneath my arm, so it felt that I had to hold my arm out at least 45 degrees so that I couldn't feel this fluid buildup, in inverted commas, in my head, that was actually just nerve disruption from the biopsy and nerve disruption from the surgery. And when I called the hospital on the Tuesday morning to say, oh my God, there's a fluid buildup, it's seroma, it's all of these things that they tell you might happen, the nurse said, does it feel like you have got a couple of balls of socks rolled up and stuffed under your armpit? And I went, yeah, that's exactly how it feels. And that's how it felt. So she said, it's not fluid. It's the sensory disruption. That's perfectly normal. But if that had been written on my medical explanation of how this surgery is going to feel afterwards, I would have been so grateful, because I felt so worried that there was fluid developing when actually there wasn't at all.
So something for other people who may be going through the same experience.
It feels odd, and actually still now feels strange.
But when you spoke to the hospital, they were like, that's perfectly normal.
And she described it to me in those terms. And as soon as she had, it made perfect sense. And I then realised that what we were talking about was a similar thing. There was no fluid buildup. It was just that.
Anything else that you feel
there's a couple of other things. Yeah, I think the other thing I would say is that, you know, anybody that's about ready to go through this, be very aware of how uncomfortable these post-operative bras are. There's an element of compression to them, and there is an element of lifting your breast up and sort of putting it back into the place it should be in. And that you have to wear that 24/7 for 4 weeks. That is no picnic. I'm still wearing it. And, you know, that is definitely not a walk in the park. It sounds ridiculous, doesn't it, that that should be a challenge. But when you are emotional, when you are tired, when you're really anxious, when you are in pain, these small things are incredibly irritating. The other thing that I really wish I'd known, which only happened, I think, probably sort of 2 weeks post-surgery, is that I felt the most unbelievable sensations in my nipple. So it was like in my nipple area and in and around the nipple area, and then also underneath my armpit. So it felt like, you know, when those, tell you what it felt like, you know, the fiber optic, those awful fiber optic plants or trees that have got sort of long fiber optic spikes that are
like tendrils.
Yes,
if you like that.
Yeah. So it felt like I had those sort of tendrils that were being brushed. And you know when you've got your hair in a really awkward ponytail and you take it out and then you have to brush it?
Oh, and you get the ponytail pain.
It was like a cross between that, fiber optic fibres being brushed backwards and in the wrong direction 24/7, and just so much sensation, like a sensation overload that was truly horrific. Not painful, but just a constant. It was there the time.
Like pins and needles in a way.
No, not as nice as pins and needles.
Not as nice
as that. Horrible. Oh. Not painful, but really
and had
horrible.
Had they warned you about that?
They had said, when I went back over the literature, which I've read a million times, sensory disruption. But this was to the point where I wanted to jump out of a window. It was so bad. And it was horrible. But that has sort of leveled out now. I'm not feeling that anymore. That probably lasted for 4 or 5 days. And I really could have coped better with that if somebody had said, this is going to happen. It's going to feel similar to this. You won't be able to do a huge amount about it. Although, of course, I Googled the arse out of how to desensitize your breast area after surgery and then started employing loads of tactics. So I think at this point we go back to the, I'm not a fad girl. I'm intellectually curious.
Love it.
Yeah. So I then spent the 4 or 5 days of this traumatic episode trying to employ those tactics, which was, you know, how to re-engage with the feeling that should be there by looking at the other breast, and trying to remember what that should feel like. So I did all of that, and, you know, that gave me a purpose.
Yes.
But well, I wish I'd known.
That's the things. Now, maybe you, what we're talking about now will help in some way to somebody else who's going through the same thing. Can I ask you a question about your toilet habits?
Oh my goodness, again, this is another thing I wish I'd known.
Now, I did try to tell you, didn't I?
Yeah, so, I mean, well, I kind of knew it, but did I really think about it?
My favourite part of that time that you've been through, unable to go to the loo, was the text, the yes text.
It's happened. So because of the pain medication they give you, which is codeine, so opiate-based, you do end up feeling constipated. And I wish that I'd been more aware of that sooner. So I think I knew about it. In fact, I did. I just was so caught up in, this is cancer. This is cancer surgery. It's breast surgery. But don't forget the small things that you can do to make your life so much better. I mean, it's like, you know, when you have a baby and you, again, I keep referring back to when you have a baby. So I'm sorry for those people listening that haven't. But
you might learn something. You might prepare you.
Yeah. Or
put you off.
Or put you off completely. I mean, you had some similar issues, didn't you?
Oh, thanks for bringing that up.
I remember you had...
Yes, I did. I hadn't gone for quite a number of days and was finding it very difficult to strain as I'd had my stomach cut open and my undercarriage cut open. It was really difficult for me. And
I've just remembered the funny part of this story.
Have you remembered? Yeah. Oh, God, am I going there?
A little bit. Yeah, it's the bit that involves mum.
Yeah. So... Mum and my husband were around in the first few days after I'd come out of hospital. Bearing in mind, I'd been in hospital a week after having the twins.
Yeah.
Not for the twins.
No,
for me, because I'd been so poorly and I was basically butchered.
Yeah.
And I can remember thinking, I've got to go at some point, but I just can't. And the doctor had said...
Movicol.
Have some Movicol.
Yeah.
So... I think Tom had put me upstairs into bed and Mum had got the Movicol and she made up this huge jug of drink for me.
Mum is a little bit blind.
Well, she's not blind, but she's got old eyes.
I don't
know whether she had her reading glasses, but clearly not. And she made up this jug of the most vile...
Jelly jug.
Yeah, it tastes... Do you know what it was like? Have you had...
Yeah.
It's like drinking oil. It's like drinking water with
a strange oil. Viscosity.
Yeah, it's really disgusting. Yeah. But I was willing to do anything, try anything. So Tom had bought this jug up for me and had poured it into a huge glass and said, just try and drink as much of this and as often as you can. Yeah. So I was like necking it, like there was no tomorrow. Bring me another. Anyway, about 2 hours later, I was back down on the sofa and kind of lying on my side, and all of a sudden got a twinge and shouted Tom.
Yeah.
And I mean, I'm not going to go into any more detail, but what had actually happened was Mum had not read the dosage correctly and she'd given me something like 4 or 5 times the dose that I should have had. Now, this is fine for a person perhaps who was mobile, who could move quickly to a lavatory. However, I was not mobile.
Immobile.
Yes. So, therefore, disaster struck. And that's all I'm going to say on that.
So, all
the
you need to know...
The moral to the story is...
Read your Movicol label correctly, but definitely get some, because that was definitely worth it.
Get some prunes in the house and get yourself ready.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's move on
from that. Okay, move on from that, yeah.
So talk to me then about what's coming up, because...
Okay, so I've basically had almost 4 weeks now of recovering from the surgery, and as you can tell, I'm feeling good. Although there are still weepy days, I have to say, and they will just hit me randomly.
Did you have a little breakdown today?
No, yesterday. Had a little breakdown. So I woke up on Monday and thought, yay, I'm totally back to normal. And
with the bluebirds flying around your head.
They were, yeah. And I thought, oh, this feels really good. And I'm feeling really positive. That was Monday. And then Tuesday happened. And by midday, I just thought, I feel horrendous. I'm really upset. I'm really weepy. And then Andrew asked if we should go and have some fresh air and go for a walk later on that afternoon. And I grudgingly said yes. Not even halfway around the walk, 10 minutes into the walk, burst into tears. We had to come back. So these things do happen, and it was just because my breast was aching. And the more I move it and the more I move my arm, by the end of the day, the achier it becomes. I mean, it stands to reason.
And you are doing all of your...
Physiotherapy
that you're supposed to do, and it's the range of motion and movement that you've got
is amazing. And one of the reasons for that, and I didn't realise this until after the surgery, one of the reasons why they advocate that you consider this surgery if you've got the option is because it doesn't interfere with any of the muscle in your back or chest. It is just soft tissue, so fat and skin and the movement of veins and various bits and bobs. So it means that your recovery is much faster and is better. It's a whole recovery, really, whereas if you have to have muscles tampered with it, it's very painful and can take a lot longer to heal. And sometimes you don't get full use of the injured muscle back, whereas for me, if I continue to follow the right physio, which they have given me, and actually I've got a physio appointment tomorrow, if I continue to do that and be a very good girl and do everything I'm told, apparently everything will return to normal.
You are quite good at doing that when you trust in somebody and somebody knows more than you, which obviously doesn't happen very often, but when it does, you do listen, don't you?
I do, yeah.
You're a good girl.
This is very important to me, as it would be to everybody. So do as you are told. I am doing as I am told.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Now, we have had news today, haven't we?
Yes.
About your histology report.
That is correct.
For those people that perhaps don't know what a histology report is, what is it?
So histology is part of biology. It's a science. It's part of the cell science. And what it basically is a full and in-depth analysis of the tumour and the surrounding area that they have removed from my body. It's also an analysis of the lymph node biopsy that they have taken. So I'm going to see my surgeon on Friday, and he will at that point give me the full breakdown of what it is and where we go from here.
Are you expecting, or should people in your position right now going for this next stage of this
consultation.
Report, this consultation, should they be expecting anything out of the ordinary, or does it usually, what do you know?
No, as far as I'm aware, it should confirm the estrogen and progesterone status, receptor status of the cancer. What I'm expecting to find out is whether the margin is clear. So remember me saying that 1 in 5 have to go back in for surgery, so that could be me. So having gone this far, I could still have to go back to square one with from a surgical point of view. It will also tell me whether the cancer has spread to my lymph nodes. And for me, really, that's the most important bit, because if it has, that will mean that the next steps are very different. So it might mean that I have to have some more lymph nodes removed. It will almost certainly mean do not pass go, do not collect £200, but go straight to chemo.
Like an interesting board game. I don't think I'll be buying that version of Monopoly.
Oh my god, I'm just having some very sick thoughts about the breast cancer Monopoly board game, the different streets you would go down. And
definitely go down the movie Cole Street.
You go to community chest.
Community breast. Like it. Oh, we might have something
here. Maybe. Okay, so all joking aside, though, hopefully there won't be any surprises with the margin, and hopefully it won't spread to my lymph nodes. We should know the HER2 status by Friday.
Blimey, that seems like a time ago where we were talking about that.
Yeah, and to be fair, they've probably not chased it that much, because actually they wouldn't do anything with that info until we have this bit anyway. So again, I'm not too worried. It wouldn't have made any difference up until now, and in fact, not until after Friday anyway. So no sweat on that. There's some things I think you can feel anxious about and worry about. Some things you just got to take them off your plate.
Yeah.
Pick your battles. Pick your mental battles very carefully, because there really is no point in worrying about that if it wasn't going to have any impact until after the surgery and after at least 4 weeks of recovery. There's no point in worrying about that.
I agree.
So I think Friday is the date, really, and everything kind of hangs on that.
And are we going to perhaps have a celebration on Friday evening if we get the news that we want? Because remember we said we wanted to look forward to something every week?
Yeah, and as a non-drinker, I will crack open the Ribena on Friday night if we get the... green light. If you've listened to Matthew McConaughey's book, and I listened to it on Audible, he talks about green lights. So I'm really hoping in his voice, which I can imagine right now.
All right, calm down.
That Friday is another one of life's green lights.
Okay, well, let's keep our fingers crossed for the green light on Friday.
Yes.
And we will catch up with another recording after you've had those results.
Gosh, I can't believe that we finished episode 5. Thanks once again for listening. Thank you again to Heather for keeping me sane through yet another week on this journey. And whilst I am waiting for hopefully what will be a Matthew McConaughey green light, please keep sharing your stories with me over on Instagram and Twitter. I think by talking with one another, we are certainly taking away the stigma that surrounds talking about cancer of any type. And that really does make me, and hopefully you, feel less alone. Until next time.